Hello and welcome to another episode of the Broadband Bunch. My name is Pete Pizzatello and I am joined by Curtis Niddle and Christian Bastian today. Curtis is the Vice President of Wired Technology at Cable Labs. Curtis, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, you're welcome, Pete.
And Chris Bastian, he's the SVP and CTO for the Society of Cable Telecommunication Engineers, or SCT. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Pete.
Before we kick off, you know, I want to dig a little bit in your background, but I want to say congrats. I just saw that you guys were both named as part of the 2022 Cable Facts 100, which is an award that recognizes exceptional leadership over the past year. It's been a crazy year, so clearly somebody is happy with what you guys have been doing. So congrats on that.
Yeah, thank you.
To give some context to our viewers, or listeners, I should say, you know, perhaps we could just quickly just walk in through your background, your journey into how you ended up in broadband. I'm up. Curtis, you want to start us off?
Yeah, sure. So I actually started my career in government research down in Sandia National Laboratories in Albuquerque. Okay. And I worked on some pretty cool stuff down there. But every time we got to where we were almost finished, some politician would make some changes to funding and, you know, stop an activity. You might know how that is. And so I entered telecommunications back in 94 with US West Advanced Technologies, and I've been in telecom now since 1994, where, you know, a lot of my work can help millions of people. So that's what really motivated me.
That's great. And Chris, how about you?
I've been in telecom a little bit longer. I also started out in government work. I was at an intelligence agency for the first 10 years after getting out of school. Went around the world building networks, and then came into cable and cellular back, you know, when in the early days when cable was building out a lot of cellular networks as well, and have been in cable ever since. So 36 years total, 20 years in cable specifically.
Wow, that's great. I think I also started off in federal and defense contracting, selling software, but we can compare war stories later on. What I wanted to explain, maybe just help us understand how SCTE and Cable Labs are related and separate. I know there's a unique relationship there. Just if you can unpack that for us, just to understand how you guys work together.
So originally, we were two separate organizations, and Cable Labs focused on the actual communications technology, and SCTE focused a lot on the outside plant aspects of cable telecommunications. And it's only been recently, maybe 18 months ago now, that we merged, basically. And so SCTE is now a wholly owned subsidiary of Cable Labs. Chris, what else would you like to add?
Yeah, even prior to merging, we worked, you know, very closely together. We had a lot, you know, I worked with Curtis a great deal and a lot of others out of Cable Labs. We were, you know, exchanging a lot of information as much as two separate companies could. But what's great about the merger now is that we are, you know, one company, and it's a one-stop shop for that research and development and applied science and training and certification. For dedicated to the cable industry, so there's no barriers left. We can freely exchange information as early in the life cycle of services and technologies as possible.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think, like you said, the applied science and the research kind of bring it together, instead of working in a vacuum, getting real time feedback from folks that are dealing with those problems. That's pretty interesting. So there's a lot going on, right? We're going to talk through some of that stuff in the industry. But, you know, what are some of the things, you know, top themes that you guys are focusing on jointly this year?
Well, from a Cable Labs perspective, this year we're trying to get launched our latest generation of technology over hybrid fiber coax networks. And that's DOCSIS 4.0. Many people in the industry, I'm sure, will have heard of that. Some of the other things at Cable Labs anyway, it's fiber. You know, we're big on fiber. HFC is mostly fiber, but fiber to the home, we spend a lot of time on that. And also a, you know, relatively new fiber technology called coherent optics. We're trying to make that less expensive and highly capable for access network applications. So that's a couple of things that's going on at Cable Labs.
Yeah, and on the SCTE side, we have the SCTE standards program. Over 130 companies are involved, both network operators and the vendor community. And last year, we completed a standard called the Generic Access Platform. One of the key outside plant network elements is the fiber node. And so we standardized that. It hadn't been standardized before. It was proprietary, you know, per vendor. So it's a common infrastructure. The mechanicals, the electrical, the power is all standardized now. And then it is also a platform for convergence that we can launch off of that, not just HFC, but also PON, Wi-Fi, 5G modules can all fit within that same enclosure. And then the other side of that, the standards program focuses on both the network layer, but also the service layer as well. So we have the Explorer program, which looks at emerging services like aging in place, telemedicine, smart cities, and the like. So I would they would be the two things I would highlight, the gap and then the Explorer advanced services.
You know, it's really refreshing to hear because I feel like a lot of the industry is about, and there's a lot of new folks coming into this industry because they're being dragged into it, but it's about the specific technologies to solve a problem. But and so talking about DOCSIS and fiber in the same, and talking about HFC and PON and Wi-Fi in the same breath is refreshing. So how do we clear that up in the industry? What is the message when you talk to people about, I'm only looking at fiber or, you know, or cable or, you know, fixed wireless?
Fiber or cable, it's not really even a choice anymore. The operators are actually doing both, right? If we're talking about DOCSIS over HFC, then that last little segment is coax. But we have a lot of operators that are deploying fiber all the way to the premise and also deploying 10 gigabits per second symmetric type of capacity over those fiber networks. And bringing Wi-Fi into it, we do a ton of work in Wi-Fi. We're large contributors in a lot of the Wi-Fi standards organizations, and we have people that have actually won awards for their Wi-Fi work in those organizations. So it's all very synergistic, in my opinion. It's definitely not one or the other. So in that respect, we're all just kind of one big happy family, whether it's coax or fiber or right. Wi-Fi for that matter.
Do you think we'll ever evolve out of that conversation about the different flavors and just really focus on the technology performance, affordability aspects?
I think that ultimately most of our focus over the last 20, 25 years has been about, speeds, right? And I think in the future, it's going to be less about speeds. And at the end of the day, you know, even the cable competition, the telcos, we're all going to be deploying very, very similar technology, and we're going to have to find ways to differentiate ourselves, from a competitive perspective.
Yeah. And so, Chris, you mentioned some things around convergence. Can you just explain that concept a little bit more? I mean, it's a loaded word, I think, and I think there's a lot that the listeners can benefit from.
Unpacking. Yeah, I agree that convergence is network segment convergence has been happening. When I worked at Comcast, 20 years ago, it was happening in the network piece that, three networks were becoming two and then becoming one, having a single network platform for the services to traverse. I think what we're seeing now is it's end-to-end convergence customer to your point of, the customer's focus is on having their services work whenever they request them. Mm-hmm. So it's complete end to end convergence that it's the network layer, the service layer, the provisioning when the service or multiple services are first activated to the billing. They want all of that converged so that it's easier to use their collection, their unique collection of services.
Are you seeing any, not only does consumer, just clarifying that I think is helpful, but is there anything in the current legislation that you think is just kind of misunderstood by the policymakers? I mean, I think they're doing their best to try to get their heads around all the technical aspects, but are there any blind spots that you guys wish that they would address?
Well, from my perspective, I think the politicians are focusing mostly on the outside plant, right? The fiber versus coax battle rages in the legislative committees and some of these government programs that are they got a lot of money to spend, right, and to hand out to states. And I think that well, let me tell you, just last week we had some folks in from NTIA, and they're the ones that are distributing mm-hmm. a lot of this money. And we did a demonstration of our DOCSIS technology, and we talked a lot about fiber to the home and things like that. And there was one person that as follow-up to our tech policy individual said the only thing he regrets is that he didn't know about much of this a year ago. So that kind of gives you an idea that there's a common misperception that fiber is the only way to go to provide broadband, to support work from home, learn from home, whatever the case may be. And that's just not true. So,
yeah, I do think there's a lot of noise, right, in the marketplace. There's a lot of chatter, especially when COVID kicked in and everybody's trying to figure it out. And if you think about it at the state and local level, there's a lot of people that are being asked to solve a problem they don't know anything about. And so some of the criticisms Joe and I have for the, you know, on the industries, we kind of talk over those people and we need to be more inclusive, right? So I think part of that challenge, part of that confusion is, you know, whoever they're hearing first or loudest or most or they're first exposed to kind of anchors their thinking. So my hope is you guys continue to kind of thaw that and educate. And that kind of leads me to, I know you guys have a big event in Philadelphia in September, the Cable Tech Expo. And it's impressive, right? You guys have a ton of sessions, I think 100 and some speakers and different tracks. And I think it'd be interesting to really see the content that falls out of that, because that's how we find people learn is what their peers are doing and that kind of story sharing. And the theme that you picked is pretty interesting. I think it's creating the infinite possibilities. I was wondering if you could just kind of illuminate why you decided that is a kind of a non-technical title, and it's pretty interesting, I think.
Yeah, we're thrilled to be back in person. We had the, you know, the 2 years of virtual because of COVID. You know, our last show was back in 2019. So it's just, you know, we're open for business again, and I think everybody is really clamoring for that. I personally have been traveling, you know, a great deal, back to my normal travel profile since March. And right. And when I meet up with people I haven't seen in 2 years, it's very exciting to have that face to face.
Yeah.
And so we're planning. We've been planning at this since late last year. This party in Philadelphia starting September 19th. And like you said, we're going to have 57 workshops, 13 different technology tracks. And I think people are just going to be elated not only to receive that content, but just all of the hallway conversations and the dinners and just getting back together and being face to face, because you know this technology, as much as we're drive technology and we love all these conference calls and you know what that allows us to do, there's something about being face to face and having the sidebar ad hoc conversations that you had no idea you were going to have until you saw that person in the hallway. So, and as far as creating the infinite possibility, we do want that focus. A lot of times we do get caught up in the with the marketing of, you know, this speed versus that speed. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, the customers, they want their services wherever and whenever. And we want to put the broadband connectivity to work. Whether it's learning or working or playing. When they're on that network, we want all those emerging services to work reliably and securely.
Yeah, and I might add there, imagining the possibilities, I think really relates to the future networks that the operators are developing. You know, everybody's asking, well, what are we going to do with this speed? And I don't think there's a solid answer to that just yet. We want people to imagine it. And in that respect, we're inventing this future, and we're doing it all together, and that includes app developers. You know, how can we imagine using the capacities that are going to be available on future networks?
Yeah, and it brings me to I noticed that you have added a few tracks, and as a software guy, I'm interested or excited to see the software development, automation, tooling, DevOps, and Agile in there, because what's frustrating to me in this space, it's very hardware centric, very network centric, right? Outside plant centric. So, as we all know, software is important in terms of getting to economies of scale and automation, but also data, right? Being able to kind of use and leverage data. So why is it that you've inserted those tracks in there in this session?
So we, like I mentioned, we start forming the tracks, and well, it all starts out with the program committee. So the program committee is in place in January, and our organizations are very member driven. So we stay close with what the members' needs are, and they suggest the tracks. So we have 13 tracks this year. 10 of them are brought forward from last year, and then we have the three that you mentioned that are new. And we had our operators, that's what they're focusing on in their workspaces, is the DevOps, the software development, and the artificial intelligence machine learning. And they wanted to solicit, with the call for papers that goes out in February, they wanted to solicit the latest technical abstracts on those topics.
Yeah, and I think from a software perspective, it's also about a lot of the things that are happening in the industry, the virtualization and software-defined networking, right? It has that software term in it. And it goes beyond that, right? It's about innovations. And whereas previously, you know, an idea might need to be implemented in hardware, we're seeing now that a lot of the ideas that people think about, they're not just about architecture, but about rapid prototyping in software. And so I personally, whereas historically I might have not hired much in the way of software capability, that's what we're looking for right now, is more software folks for that rapid prototyping and tools development activity.
Yeah, it's interesting. I would add, because I've, you know, you see with some of the larger box companies turning into more software data companies. Mm-hmm. You have Plume, you have Amazon Eero, you have Google Home. I think the awareness of the data is, of the subscriber is pretty valuable, right? And the only way to get to that data is through software, which I think is an interesting trend that we're keeping an eye on. And, you know, to your point about AI and machine learning, I mean, there's a lot of hype about that, right? I mean, in every industry. Do you see, are we getting to real applications of AI and machine learning in what you're seeing in your membership?
You know, from our perspective, in the past, we weren't always able to capture kind of the signature of the communications channel to be able to determine whether there's anything wrong with it, right? Some area that's being infected by noise or something like that. And now we can not only collect signatures of the communication channel, but machine learning is helping us to identify the problems in the network, the anomalies in the network. And for example, we have a software tool that we call the anomaly detector. It collects information from the network, and it can identify what type of problem a particular communication channel is in the network. And not only what kind, but sometimes where the problem is located, which really helps to rapidly resolve problems, and often before customers even know it's happening.
So is self-healing within grasp, you think?
You know, we're very hardware-centric out in the plant. You know, if it's a loose connector or something like that, a corroded bolt of some sort, you know. And so it's pretty hard to heal those sorts of things sure. by itself, you know. Right. But man, I'll tell you, getting to the point where you can almost say, oh yeah, we got that problem and it's in this particular area, really, really helps technicians in the field to solve the problem quickly.
Sure. Chris, did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah. So within our standards program, we have an AI ML working group meets every other week. And then it's been a very vibrant and active group that our members bring in their latest projects of what they're focusing on, where they're applying AI. And it's throughout the entire life cycle, whether it's planning the network, how, you know, applying AI to you know, to automate and to data mine, where is it best to put your network elements, which are limited resources, and you know, minimize the cost to build out the network across a particular area. We also have another project on video quality, just how to optimize that based on AI signatures. So it's really across the entire planning, engineering, operations, and deactivations that they're applying AI to the workspace.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great to hear. You're listening to the Broadband Bunch. This is Pete Pizzatello. I've been speaking with Curtis Indall. He's the VP of Wired Technologies at Cable Labs, and Chris Bastian. He's the SVP and CTO at SETE. We've been talking about like industry trends and the upcoming Cable Tech Expo that'll be here in Philadelphia in September. You can learn more about that event at expo.scte.org. I wanted to talk about some another trend. We didn't get a chance to talk about it earlier, but I saw that you guys were hosting or had hosted a 10G challenge. Can you just explain what that was, what you were looking for, and what were some of the outcomes that you guys have learned?
Yeah, it's the 10G challenge, all about money, right? We're giving away prize money, and this particular challenge really aligns well with the Imagine the Possibilities for this upcoming expo. So in essence, right, we've invited innovators to submit ideas around how they might use a 10G network, which means these higher capacities, you know, 10 gigabits per second, for example. And we received over 90 submissions. However, only about 30 of them were in compliance. And you might be asking yourself, like I asked, I'm like, well, why were so many not in compliance? And well, some of these ideas that were submitted didn't even require a network. So, you know, right off the bat, we had to toss those out. But so we're giving away $10,000 for People's Choice. We're giving away $50,000 for each of four categories: live, work, learn, and play. And then $100,000 for a grand prize, right? We're calling that the Pinnacle Award. And the voting, the People's Choice voting now is closed. The industry expert judges, which came from Intel, Corning, the Mayo Clinic, and Zoom, they've completed their judging, and the winners are going to be announced at the expo coming up on September 21st in Philadelphia. So pretty interesting stuff. If you're interested in seeing some of the submissions, you can go to this 10gchallenge.com/view-vote. So if you're interested Definitely. In those things.
Yeah, I'm looking forward. I will be at the event, so I'm looking forward to see who won and see if they can buy me a beer.
Absolutely.
So there's, you know, there's a lot of, you know, that's a great example of some of the innovation we've been talking about. And there's a ton of funding flooding into the space, private equity, public funding. What's your concern in terms of, you know, competing for skills with other industries? It's something we talk about in terms of workforce. You know, we keep saying this is a generational opportunity for this industry, but it's a generational opportunity for people that are getting into this business, right? This is something that they can build a career over for the next 40, 50 years and have some purposeful impact on the communities that they live in, but also really have a chance to be pioneers in the space. I mean, so what would you say to folks that are looking for other industries to kind of plant their feet, but and why they should consider broadband right now?
Yeah, Chris, you should take that one for right now, that you guys have some activities in that area, right?
Yeah, so you bring up a great point, Pete. It's all this money, all this construction brings up an excellent opportunity. There's going to be a lot of building going on in the next few years. And across our industry, there's a need for hiring in a lot of new people. And so we do need to market and, you know, retain and retrain the people to do all that building and operating and engineering. So I'm going to be a bit biased, but it's been a great career for me. I think it's a very vibrant community for learning the latest technology, and the people in the industry are great to work with. So we need that focus from at a cross industry level to attract the people, because there's a lot of building and operating to do.
Yeah, and Pete, if I may add, I really think this is going to require some non-conventional ways of thinking. You know, scholarships or sponsoring at the college level, right? To really get students, younger folks, focused and interested in this technology. And here's another non-conventional way of thinking. I think most people, including Cable Labs, while we allow part-time employment, right, most of the time we're looking for full-time folks. But as an example, I've got a gentleman on my team who's been in the industry for years and years. And, you know, he wanted to retire, but he didn't want to completely retire. Right. And so we worked out a part-time arrangement, you know, 4 days a week, where, you know, he still gets full benefits because that, you know, satisfies the Cable Labs policy for benefits. But he gets basically, every weekend is a 3-day weekend for him. And this is a win-win for both of us, right? He gets to ease his way into retirement. And I get to leverage the skills that he's developed over the 30 or 35 year career that are becoming more and more hard to find. So
right.
It's those sorts of things I think we're going to have to really start to think more about.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned a couple of things early on around the software development and also kind of the platform, right? You know, that there's a lot we don't know that's going to run on these networks mm-hmm. in the future, right? And so whether it's telehealth or distance learning and all the other cool stuff that's out potentially out there. So that's something that we've been trying to do, is just kind of bring in, you know, to help people see the possibilities as you guys are talking about. But we're still talking to the same folks, right? And so reaching into the universities even younger. I mean, these guys spend hours on the network, you know, do they mm-hmm. not realizing it's an opportunity? They probably have more understanding of what's going on than we did back when we started working on the internet. Yeah, it should be interesting. So just to kind of, we ask a couple standard questions to kind of see where everybody's brains are. You know, if you're looking forward and being as exciting and innovative and fast moving it is right now, where do you see the industry 3 years from now? I'll take Chris first.
We have the two planes. We have the network plane, and that's more of our legacy, our wheelhouse of where we've been, where Cable Labs has been doing the R&D and the testing, and SCT has been doing, you know, the training and certification for decades. But then you have that service layer as well, and all of our members are looking at not just fast speeds on the network, but how do those services. And as you mentioned, Pete, you know, we don't know today in 2022 what the most popular, you know, service or application is going to be, you know, 5 years from now. But we have to, you know, build the networks as future proof as we can, that have that, you know, the high speeds, low latencies, high reliability, high security. And then we also need to work across industries with the service developers and just make sure what are they first seeing. We don't know everything within the cable industry. Let's get the best minds together at the table and see what they feel they're going to need 5 years, 10 years down the line, and co-develop.
Do you guys, and I'll come back to you, Curtis, real quick, but do you guys kind of do a strategic plan, you know, where you're hosting those types of conversations and trying to get people to look downstream and use that to kind of then move over to the different industries and say, this is kind of how we see it, and try to find some convergence there at all?
Oh, I think pretty commonly we're often having those sorts of meetings, trying to see where things are going to converge and what's really going to be happening in the future, for sure.
Okay. So Curtis, what about you? Where are we in 3 years?
Well, you know, Chris really nailed it, right? In addition to speed, it's going to be about latency, reliability, and privacy. And this might take a little bit more than 3 years, but I think in a future, broadband is going to be much like some of our other utilities that we experience. Mm. I like to think about electricity, right? That when we go to turn on a light in our home, it's just there. We don't have to wait for it to download. We don't have to think about the flow rate of electrons into our homes or the water flow rate or anything like that. And so I think in the future that we're going to reach that point. Now, nobody knows where that point is. But that point will be such that when we need broadband, it's there. There's enough of it there to do what we need to do with it. And that's how I think we'll ultimately, and I hope we ultimately get to that point in the future.
You know, I was trolling through the other Cable Facts 100 folks, and I won't name the person, but they asked him about will we be able to close the digital divide? And he said, no. And it wasn't because of technology, or desire, it was because of legislation, right? And so that wasn't, that's really going to be frustrating. You know, if we have all the capability and we want to close this gap, but there's mm-hmm. still a chance for us to not, you know, to kind of waste this generational moment, you know, like what is the measure of success? Does, and you know, what kind of risks keep you up at night thinking about the potential impact you all can have kind of where you are in your careers? And then looking back in 5 or 10 years, I'm like, dang, we kind of missed the mark.
Yeah, that digital divide is a tough one, right? It's and it's unfair, right? I think everybody should have access to broadband, whether it's for any one of those four, you know, live, learn, work, and play. I think that the real challenge, though, is technology. We need technology solutions to really be able to make that happen and close that divide. That's what I think.
Chris, any thoughts?
I want to put a positive spin on it. I think we can close it. It's, you know, conceptually, we should be able to close it. But then I think about the, you know, food shortages in this country, you know, a country that has such an abundance of food. Why do we still have starving people here too? So I usually am an optimistic person, and I think we could close it with using technology to get that network and broadband connectivity into everybody's hands. Right. But then I often wonder why we can't solve, after so many decades, why we can't solve the food shortages.
It's a great point. I mean, I'm often considered cynical, but I'd rather be cynical now than later, right? So let's really hunker down and say we're not going to close it and tackle and close those gaps, rather than wringing our hands 10 years when we have really no opportunity to attack mm-hmm. it. I think the question's going to be, is what success look like, right? And I think everyone has different levels of success. And that's what I worry about for like the local and state leaders, is the consumer level expectations versus what we can actually get done, maybe misaligned specifically timelines and affordability things. So maybe we get there and nobody's happy. I don't know, but we'll see. And so related to that is, you know, if you guys have been doing this for a while, if you can go back, say 20 years and talk to yourselves and just yourselves, you know, what would you tell yourself about career advice, Curtis?
Yeah, so I'll start there. You know, as I think back to myself, you know, 20 and 30 years ago, my advice would be to basically always keep learning and be open to new ideas and new ways of doing things. And I don't know if it was our CEO that really coined this, but, you know, fail often and fail fast. Right. You know, I've heard that quote before, and I don't know who to attribute that to. But, you know, I would definitely tell myself those things. And most importantly, probably invest early in 401ks.
What about Yahoo or something like that? Or Facebook?
Right.
Yeah, it's funny. Chris, how about you?
It is an industry of constant learning. You can never get too complacent. You're constantly reading, constantly, you know, talking with people about the latest, you know, technologies and trends. So it is, you know, just make that investment that constantly to learn, and then maybe, you know, jump some more. I've typically stayed at companies, you know, a fair amount of time, and maybe for that exposure for learning different things. I find that you know, thrown into a completely new environment, that's when you learn very quickly, because you have to. And, you know, it's the fire hose, and you're just really, really coming up to speed on things.
That's really good, Chris. Actually, I mean, people are fundamentally kind of fearful of change, and you know, don't be afraid of change, and really challenge yourself. And I think you're right, Chris, that making that jump every once in a while kind of helps with forcing change and forcing challenge.
Which is kind of counter to generationally where we came from, where it was you stayed in the job for mm-hmm. 30 years and you got your pension, and that was that, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think trading a paycheck for being curious and intellectual stimulation and skill acquisition is what I'm hearing from you guys is pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my dad. It was it's 40 years at the Bell System, you know, straight out of high school, his entire career with Bell, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it was about stability. And you're talking about instability, which is really interesting dynamic, right? So, hey, I appreciate talking to both of you. Looking forward to seeing you guys in September. How can, let's start with Curtis, how can our listeners learn more about you and your company?
Well, I think starting at cablelabs.com, and if you're really interested in what's going on at Cable Labs, you can read some of our blogs. You'll see blogs on optics, artificial intelligence, Wi-Fi, mobile. That's really the best place to start. And of course, at Expo, we'll have a booth there. Cable Labs will have a booth, and we'll have a handful of demos being shown there in our booth. So if there's interest in learning more, feel free to explore those two items.
And Chris?
I'll also point to our website, so sd.org. We have for the standards programs, I mentioned a couple of the working groups. So .org/standards for all of that standards work. And then we have all the training opportunities also at the website, training and certification for improving your skills within the cable industry. And then during Expo, I'll be there Sunday through Thursday. And as I mentioned, it's my hometown. I'm loving to be there the whole week. And I'll be heavily at the Fall Technical Forum workshops from beginning to end.
Yeah, it's great. So Chris, Curtis, thank you for joining us. I appreciate all the time and insight.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Broadband Bunch. I want to thank you for listening. And if you made it this far, you're probably into all things broadband. So if you get a chance, feel free to check out our website at broadbandbunch.com for our latest episodes. There's a bunch of resources. And we'd even like to share your story. So please reach out.